Good afternoon, and welcome to another installment of Coffee Talk. This afternoon, we're sort of inspired by what is happening in Brazil and the recent domestic situation with the president being impeached, and our segue is the BRICS. And I'm joined here by our senior research fellow, Eric Morris, who is going to discuss the topic with me and essentially discuss the powers in the region and discuss the sort of the thought that the BRICS would become a major player in the geopolitical sense. How are you, Eric?
I am good. Thank you for having me. This sort of comes up at an interesting time because, as some of our listeners may realize, the Globe and Mail did a center spread just over the weekend on the comparative economic strengths, weaknesses, and otherwise of the four countries, sorry, the five countries known as BRICS, which is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. And in a sense, sitting here in April of 2016, it's sometimes really hard to imagine that anyone could have possibly thought at any time that that particular collection of countries could have become an economic or geopolitical power or superpower. And the, I mean, the origin of the BRIC, the term BRIC and BRICS, comes around 2001, and it was invented by the president of Goldman Sachs, the New York investment firm. And what he was trying to do, apparently, was to describe an order of countries whose economies promised to perhaps make them the next tier or the next generation of global superpower.
And actually, it's interesting to talk about these because in my perspective, India with 1 billion people, China with another 1 billion people, they have the manpower, they have the manufacturing, particularly in China now. They have the economies that would support this rise of a new middle class. But yet again, it's very difficult to see, quote unquote, a superpower being filled by China or India when Russia's in the mix. When actually, in the previous iteration of Russia, prior to the fall of the Berlin Wall, it was, in essence, for all intents and purposes, a superpower and a major player on the international stage, and it still is at this point in time. So I'm not really sure how Russia's being mixed with China and India is a rising power when Russia has always been a power.
I'm going to disagree with you that Russia is now a superpower. Russia is attempting to project itself as a superpower by virtue of its president's maneuverings and its judicious use of armed force.
Okay.
But it doesn't have the economic strength to maintain that.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
And, I mean, there are a couple. One of the big lessons from history that everyone forgets, especially economists who sit on Wall Street, is that in the long run, as John Maynard Keynes says, economics may triumph or we're all dead, choose one. But in the short term, politics always beats economics.
Yes.
And we are seeing, I think what we were seeing in the origin of the BRICS concept was a prolongation of Fukuyama's end of history thesis in which the great conflicts had been concluded. There was going to be no more history as it was traditionally known as in the clash of political powers, and the world would forge forward on the basis of a market economy in which market forces would determine who was the strongest and who therefore were the great powers. And clearly that hasn't worked.
No.
I mean, Russia is what Russia was in 1980, a third world state with nukes. China has great potential to be a superpower.
Absolutely does.
But the thing is, you've got to redefine the term superpower in China's case, because China throughout, certainly the modern period being any time after AD 1, in their case, the Chinese have never had huge interests outside their own territorial sphere. They've got territorial contiguity, and they're not highly interested in conquest that they can't immediately use.
Actually, another interesting part of China's case, I think, is the flow, and actually India's, is the flow of capital from India and China by the rich, super rich, and the individuals that actually can afford to leave or take their money out. They are taking their money out and not reinvesting it in the
Russia as well.
And Russia, I guess, as well.
Russia, that's almost completed, no matter what Putin can do. And the problem, again, is politics dominates economics.
Yes.
And in this case, the outflow of, you can call the outflow of capital either economic or political, but the consequences are both. And I'm not even sure that economics is the right word in this case, finance.
Yeah.
Money goes where it is best applied, or easiest applied and safest.
Yes.
And those countries aren't safe. India is probably the safest. India appears to operate by a well-known set of rules, even if they are pretty corrupt, but they're stable for the time being. China is destabilizing politically. To what extent, we don't know. But it's an uncomfortable situation, and it's always had transparency and corruption problems. Russia's a mess.
Mm-hmm.
I left the Canada-Russia Business Council in 2001 in disgust. And as I was riding down in the elevator, a Russian lady said to me, "You know, you're right." She says, Russia's not a country, it's a disease.
Yeah.
But getting back to the BRICS, again, South Africa seems to have been added to that. I'm not sure why, but probably wishful thinking and a desire for political diversity, because this kind of stuff does tend to creep into any matter, a multilateral organization. You see the G7 expand to G8, expand to G20, or at least not expand to, but spin off the G20, because everybody wants in the club. But what you look at, if you glance through a history of the BRICS concept, is that from about 2006 onwards, it becomes very heavily driven by the Russians.
Yes.
And why is it driven by the Russians? Because they're trying to consolidate their new economic world order in opposition to the existing world or economic world order, from which they feel as excluded as they do from an international political system in which they see their veto in the UN as their only guarantee of safety.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at several countries with very little in common. No geographic connection.
No, absolutely.
And nothing really in there except a certain desire to rival the West, which they don't have the clout to do.
You know, one of the things about South Africa that it's the sphere of influence that's, I mean, somehow South Africa continues to be, and I don't mean it in a bewildered way, but rather it continues to be play an important role in its region. And China's role with South Africa now is very interesting. It's something to watch, and it's been something to watch for the last number of years, where China's influence in South Africa is increasing. A lot of South Africans are being educated in China. A lot of investment money is going from China to South Africa and back into China. A lot of products are flowing back and forth. It's a very interesting new relationship that until probably 5 or 6 years ago, it wasn't as important as it is now.
5 or 6 years ago coincides roughly with the collapse of the Gaddafi regime.
Yes, absolutely.
And the interesting thing is there, I said that China doesn't have far-reaching territorial imperatives, but certainly it has huge trade ambitions.
Absolutely.
Huge economic ambitions. And what they found out when the government, the Gaddafi government, was overthrown is that there is no such thing as a secure supply line, and there is no such thing as a secure remote base. I understand, and I may be wrong on this, the Chinese investment across South Saharan, sub-Saharan Africa is also waning. And the fact that you tell me that it's increasing in South Africa suggests to me that they view South Africa as a more stable base of supply and investment, and B, a less vulnerable supply line, because basically it's straight across the Indian Ocean.
Yes.
The only people they have to worry about there are the Indians, and it wouldn't surprise me to see a Chinese naval base show up in Sri Lanka at some point or other. What the Indians would, how the Indians would react to that would be very interesting. But China and India are not friends.
No, they haven't been friends for a long time. It's very interesting. I mean, the whole concept is, I mean, it's economic, it's social, because if we look at it, I mean, there's a social dimension to all of this. As these countries become richer, as the middle class becomes more solidified in these places, the society's changing quite a bit, particularly in the urban areas. And that's something to watch. It's in addition to the politics, as the politics of the of society or the politics of the social makeup in these countries.
And that's legitimate to explore in the context of any single one of those countries.
Yes.
Start trying to make geopolitical combinations, and you run into rough water. And I'm going to venture out on a bit of a limb here to draw a comparison with the last time somebody attempted a geopolitical combination between countries that had absolutely nothing in common.
Yes.
and no point of contact, and that is the Berlin-Tokyo axis of 1939-45. I don't know what Hitler had in mind when he entered into that, other than to use the Japanese as a distraction from what he was doing in Europe. The Japanese had definite imperial ambitions in East Asia,
yes,
and probably were using the Germans for about the same thing. But there was no point of economic contact. There couldn't be once Germany was under close blockade and at war with the Soviet Union. Anything coming across Asia Minor would have been a trickle,
mm-hmm,
and easily interrupted, because the Russians and the British were both in Iran. So that's a really extreme example of blue sky thinking. But I'll submit that if Jeffrey Sachs, not Jeffrey Sachs, Goldman Sachs, actually thought of the BRICS as representing any kind of geopolitical bloc, and I'm not certain that he did,
mm-hmm,
then that's off base.
Yeah. And just going back to my original point, that the impeachment process in Brazil inspired this conversation, because the talk on Brazil being sort of a member of a rising group of states with economic ambitions really inspired this conversation about the BRICS. And it's a complicated situation. We don't really have much time for, unfortunately, to dissect it even further today. But I think we've touched on a number of issues that would be interesting to come back to in the next couple of months and look at as things transpire. Thanks for joining me, Eric.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and hopefully we'll talk in the next installment of Coffee Talk.